All right, you're listening to Rad Radio, and I'm your host, Danny McMartin, and we are back with the second part of our interview with Kerry Hiroyuki Tagawa. I said the whole thing.
You've been practicing. You can't tell me you haven't been practicing.
No, I haven't. I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay.
All right, so I don't even know where we left off yesterday. Do you remember?
We were talking about a lot of, especially the relevance of the show to current event. And so I thought we might talk a little bit more about the show, because I'm sure you have a lot of content about its relevance.
Yeah.
It is interesting, though, that with events in politics today, it changes everything. Mind-boggling. It's like a football game that's been ongoing.
I know, right?
And it's like first quarter, second quarter. Now it's into the sixth quarter, and
for like way too long.
Yeah,
like we're in overtime.
And the things that come up, the issues, there. Yeah, I wish I could vote tomorrow and just get it over.
You know, I read this morning that now Donald Trump might be thinking of dropping out or something. Did you see that?
Well, there's a rumor that that is a possibility. Nobody's ruled it out. But, I feel bad for the people who have been for Trump from the beginning, if something like that were to happen. That kind of scenario is possible in my mind.
Yeah.
From a guy who, first of all, and he stated that he didn't think he'd get this far.
Yeah.
And so it's not beyond the believability that he could have been doing it as publicity for all his businesses.
Maybe.
Around the world. And now that it's gotten more serious, and it shows he didn't know about Ukraine and Crimea.
Or anything.
Yeah, most of anything.
Matter?
I mean, he certainly doesn't spell perfectly. If you don't spell that well, do not be tweeting.
Right.
Because it's there. It's in the open.
Well, I think basic spelling skills should be a presidential requirement.
It's like a driver's license. Presidential license.
Yeah.
And take an SAT test.
So, yeah, I mean, woo, crazy stuff going on in the world.
Well, I think maybe we can talk about, and not any spoilers or not sort of typical things, any dish on actors or anything, but I would like to talk about the production and my fellow actors in probably a very different way than you're used to in interviews. In this way, first of all, the material, Man in the High Castle, for it being on a level of, in fact, Rolling Stone just voted it in the top 50 science fiction stories ever that have been brought to screen. Pretty huge.
Yeah.
You know, Rolling Stone is a Mensa organization, but it has great readership, followership. And they've been pretty right on, I've watched over the years in reading in Rolling Stone. Their picks of programs and music, movies. So, a big thing. And for this project, again, to be written 17 years after the war, and to come up with a scenario in which your enemies won, that is out of the box. Like, so ridiculously somewhere in the playing field of creative license.
I have to ask, Do you know this? Was the guy who wrote it American?
Yeah.
Was he? Uh-huh. Because I wonder if that was something that an American would ever...
Well, that's
you
exactly
know what I mean? It's
just
not something Americans would think of.
Exactly the point. Especially right. Because World War II in the history of America was so critical to everything that happened post-war.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, in the video documentary that I mentioned yesterday, The Secret History of the United States, Oliver Stone, little do we know as Americans the story of Franklin Delano Roosevelt and his running mate, whose name Wallace. Henry Wallace. And he was so progressive. I mean, he sounds like Bernie Sanders. He was talking about equal pay for equal work.
What?
In
what does this equal pay think of?
46. I mean...
Yeah, women still don't get equal pay.
Exactly. And that's what he was pushing. And highly about the fact that America was a diverse country, that we needed to really honor and respect people of color. And he was into Buddhism. And he appreciated and respected religions, Native Americans, African Americans, and mind-boggling. And how different our culture would have been rather than another 60 years later to have a candidate like Bernie Sanders. Whatever
yeah.
you think about Bernie Sanders, very clearly it was a turning point in consciousness for America.
Yeah.
That there was actually somebody 60 years ago who was talking that tone. So, yeah, I really recommend that documentary.
Yeah, I'm going to watch it. I am.
For the relevance of this show, written by a man in that post-war period in which we were absolutely, you know, Donald Trump kind of frenzy about America. Kind of that period is what I think Donald Trump refers to. It's the strength of America after the war.
Right.
And that attitude of being great.
Making America great again.
Yeah.
It's still pretty great. I mean, we had our problems.
It's way great. We certainly have had to work through a lot of problems in the last 8 years.
Yeah.
Since George Bush. And how we go from here will definitely be karmic as to what America, I believe, deserves. I mean, one way or the other, if it goes for Trump, we deserve that. It's a democratic process. We deserve the result. If, of course, the elections are fair.
Yeah.
They're not always. But...
But see, we're up here safe in Canada right now, so...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But even if this interview was in the middle heartland of America, you know, the energetics of it still remain the same. And if, in fact, we have Hillary Clinton for president... We deserve her, too, because that's the democratic process. So, one thing, if anything, I think Man in the High Castle brings to people a presentation of a book, of a story that's not the average norm for programming that we know.
Mm-hmm.
What the history of... three networks that turned into HBO and Netflix and now with Amazon, I think we're in a massive point of change of the difference in programming between commercial three network reality to uncensored sort of HBO programming, which allowed for more adult material and certainly couldn't be developed by networks. So this comes on the heels of that. It's the newest product for Amazon. And hopefully not the end of having product that is out of the box.
But it's like an enormous budget for this show, and it takes quite a long time to film an episode.
10 days.
Yeah. I mean, it's very involved, huh? I mean, do they make you work long days? Are you there, like, I got to be there at 6 and I'm leaving at midnight?
The normal day is usually around 14 hours.
Really?
So 12 hours is normal. 14 is more like the average, and it can certainly go longer.
Wow.
But for the extra 2 days, I mean, typically series are shot in 8 days, 7 to 8 days.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this being a 10-day schedule, certainly a lot more goes into that. And it is expensive. And for what they're spending, they're feeling happy with what they're getting.
Yeah, I mean, it's got rave reviews. Yeah, it's a huge success.
It is for the Amazon audience. Certainly not everybody can see it.
Mm-hmm.
But for the Amazon audience,
right,
it is the highest rated Amazon product so far.
Prime's under $10 a month, everybody, so... I mean,
yeah,
you should sign up. It's cheaper than Netflix.
Well, like that. So, yeah, hopefully it's going to expand. And they're talking, you know, somewhere in behind closed doors about where to go next with it. And I certainly hope that the world will be able to see it.
Yeah.
Fairly soon, hopefully.
Yeah. I mean, is it not, it's only available on Amazon in the United States? It's not available in other countries? Or?
It is available in UK,
mm-hmm,
Austria, and Germany.
Mm-hmm.
It's been that way now since the first season, which started last November.
Mm-hmm.
So it probably won't show until that same time period in November this year. But we'll see, it's not over yet. Still. The beauty of working on this show, because everybody has to put themselves in a mind frame of a reality that is fiction. Not only fiction, but a period fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And so it has kind of that double whammy. It does take an actor who's a lot more spontaneously creative or more open to imagining. I mean, all actors have to have that. You have to be creative because there's nothing in film that is absolute truth. It's all illusion.
But the set is very intricate also. I mean, everything,
yeah,
all the props and everything they use is very dated period pieces. Do they create that or do they go find things?
They find a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And then there's stuff, course, that they create, like paperwork in my office had to all be created as the flag of the Pacific States, which they created, that it's a modified Japanese kind of flag, and they have work orders that they print up,
yeah,
and then they, you know, put the orders on there, not only the forms, but it's amazing. It does help a lot to put you in that mind frame.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely makes you feel older.
That's not good.
Wherever.
Want any of that?
Well, for this character especially, Takumi is not a spring chicken, so it's okay to. Yeah, it's very not my age, but. But I remember growing up in the 50s around people like that and attitudes like this,
mm-hmm,
on both sides, on the Japanese side and the American side. And going to school and what they were teaching us, and very much was different from what we found out in the 60s and 70s. And of course, that's,
yeah,
when we rebelled, because we're just kind of fed up with being lied to so much. Kind of like a bad girlfriend, bad boyfriend,
yeah,
kind of situation. But it does very quickly when I see the clothing and the sets and the haircuts, you know, the wardrobe is unbelievable to that period or what that period mm-hmm. would be like, because it isn't really 60s. The 60s didn't happen in our reality. You know, not until the alternate reality is there a possibility of feeling more of that vibe. So it's very post-40s, but still a lot of 40s influence and, a very dated reality. So with the actors having to be that way, they've chosen actors that make something a little complicated look simple, because they're so into it themselves and able to forget themselves. There's one thing, ladies and gentlemen, like it's some new fact for you, but very clearly, in my estimation, and it's the way that I size up actors immediately, like within the first 30 seconds, if you can feel a vibe from them where they're more into themselves than the craft. It's like a selfie, or it's actually a reality where it's so different. And sometimes, and a lot of times, not even them. Certainly I had a lot of practice playing bad guys. Certainly it wasn't any of the characters that I played, but I knew how to drop into a reality that wasn't me. But that's not always the case with actors. There are people that can't quite leave themselves behind, or right. they can't quite leave the ego of what they think they are or who they are. They can't immerse themselves in being something completely different. But this show, without an exception, all the actors are so immersed in their characters. And they're not them at all. Every person that's on this show, as a person and as an actor, yeah. is different from the characters that they play.
Oh, good. So Rufus Sewell isn't that big an a-hole.
No. He is one of the sweetest, like, creative, sensitive guys I know.
That's pretty funny, because he is just straight up nasty.
Well,
he's a nasty character on the show.
He's intense.
Yeah, intense.
He knows intensity.
Yeah.
And we know whether he's a Nazi or a special forces guy for the U.S. Army.
Well, you know, I wonder. Maybe he's a, you know, maybe he's a bit of a, what's the word I'm looking for, spy? Mm. I don't know.
Well, he has that kind of intensity that he could play a lot of different characters.
Yeah.
There was one project he did called Pillars of the Earth. It was about an architect who was building churches like in the Middle Ages. Just a completely different character. It was a mini series by Ridley Scott's people, Scott Free production. So if somebody wants to see something completely different, so you will not be wasting your time to watch anything that Rufus has done. I saw him in another, I believe it was a series, but it was an English-based, wow, surprise. He's English, of course. And,
yeah.
But it seemed like the production was English in a modern setting, but he was a love interest and completely loving, warm guy that he is. So really, hats off to him for his talent, being able to be so diverse.
Now, do they make everyone who works on the show, do they live here in Vancouver? Do you guys live here all year round, or do you just do it while you're filming? I know, because I'm curious, so I figured that out.
Typically, with all productions and series, if you're not from that particular town, they'll give you a moving fee, and not that it covers a whole lot.
That's the truth. I've moved before.
Yeah.
That shit is not cheap.
I don't know. Moving is heavy duty. So they'll give you a fee, and with the thought that it'll help you move, and or cover for the time you're in production. Amazon has really gone out of their way to change some of those rules, because these kinds of things have been going on in Hollywood forever, that networks do series in other towns and they give you this moving fee. But Amazon has most graciously and grateful. Actors are very grateful.
Okay, so we talked about Rufus Sewell, right? And he's apparently an amazing person. And what about Alexa? Is it Davalos?
Davalos.
The right pronunciation?
Yes.
I always have to make sure. I'm not ever sure, but.
Which is a Greek name. Her grandfather, she's a third generation actor in her family. Her grandfather, and I wish I could remember his name, but I had seen him long ago in a movie called East of Eden? East of Eden?
Yeah.
With James Dean.
Okay. Really?
James
okay.
Dean.
He was in that movie, her grandfather.
Grandfather.
Okay.
In that movie, James Dean had a brother. An amazing actor. Amazing actor, was from the Bronx, and typically in that period of the 50s and 60s, a lot of actors came out of the Actors Studio, of course, in New York, with Lee Strasberg. They were definitely a style of actor from that period. Very intense, very focused, and just wasn't the run-of-the-mill kind of 30s and 40s actors. And the style became very different, became a lot more personal and very internal. And he was one of those actors, amazing actor. And then her mother, his daughter, was an actress and did well in the 60s, 70s. And then, of course, Alexa, now the third generation.
Yeah. Her character is very timid. On the show. She appears to be timid to me.
No, it's because you're overly not timid.
No.
I'm sorry.
Everybody's timid to me.
I'm only being rudely unfair.
No, it's true, though.
Because, it's true. And you have your hidden little timidness, which I appreciate.
Sometimes.
I like that. To have both. Women, as men should be, should have both a humble side and places where we as men know our own purity, which you probably never hear the word purity discussed over football in most of America. But men have purity, and as actors, we have to be aware of that. It's part of the acting tool. To know how to use that in your acting so you don't end up being an acting robot. Mm-hmm. But certainly she has that in her character on the show, and it's a place to start a character. And for those of us in discussion about acting, certainly taking on a role, you want to begin in a certain tone. Mm-hmm. And hopefully if it's written well, if you're able to act it well, if you're directed well, should look at watching a growth, and we call it an arc. Mm-hmm. To start at one point, to go through emotional experiences, and end up at a different point than when the story began. And certainly, yes, as parts of her energy, you're very timid. And yet, when you look at things that Juliana, the character, goes through, she doesn't back away.
Right.
She definitely meets things head on. And through the season last year, we found out a lot of different things, in different things going on around her, she adjusted to them. She went with it, and found herself in a different place than when she started. Amazingly sensitive woman. Amazing emotional range. Amazing character that she built. I mean, she built that character. And that's the beauty of acting, too. You're given a structure of a character, what the writer had in mind, what the producer agrees enough upon the quality of that character and how the story is put together to put his energy into seeing that the movie gets made. And then an actress in the final stage of the process is the one who's responsible for presenting that character. She has such skill at how to do that. An amazing, amazing personality. She is not she's not different from that sensitivity or emotional state. She's a very strong woman. And I liken her to be a great example for young girls growing up today, that the ability to be feminine, be proud of being feminine, be very glad. Like when people say, be afraid, be very afraid.
Yeah.
It's like, be glad that you are feminine. Be very glad you're feminine, because we're coming into that time, believe in history, everywhere in the world, where women's rights are increasing, as they should have been from the beginning. But it's never too late. We're still here as a humanity to begin. And femininity has been portrayed as such weak energy.
Right.
But in truth, feminine energy is massively, massively powerful.
You hear that?
Anybody that can give birth,
yeah,
you
right?
got my book.
Woo.
All right, men, I wonder how many men could actually go through childbirth.
You know, the population would decrease dramatically, I'm convinced. That would be the case.
that is an interesting thought.
We would not have any population control problems whatsoever.
Well, we're moving in that direction for other reasons, but I feel like with her, in who she really is a strong woman with deep feminine roots. She's highly emotional, highly sensitive. And that certainly is one aspect of her personality. The other part is hyper strong, just with a resolve and force. It's like a force of nature. It's that powerful to me. And I think ultimately, as human beings, we need the balance of both the feminine and masculine energy. And she certainly has that. For men, we should know more about our emotions and our sensitivities and be able to be able to express them, to share with other, to share with other people really what those things are about. And I think we're moving that in that direction as a humanity.
Okay, so now that you've mentioned that, that's a great segue to talk about Rupert Evans, who plays her boyfriend on the show. Frank? I can't,
yeah,
it's like
Frank,
a tongue twister.
Frank. It is a tongue
Frank
twister.
Frank. How many, I mean, there's like some serious tongue twisters in the dialogue on this show. Ober Grubenfuhrer, Frank. I mean, I can see people just tripping over that
right.
daily. So he's now also very timid, even more timid than her on the show. But now at the end of the season, we saw him starting to grow a set.
Mm-hmm.
If you want, you know, I'm going to put it that way.
Yeah.
Because really, that's what was happening. And then, so what are we?
We're talking about when it comes to Rupert.
Yeah.
So his range is that in the beginning of the season, he's an artist.
Yeah.
He's a heavy-duty artist, a highly creative, sensitive man in love with an incredible woman. And by the end of the series, he definitely has turned into another part of his own masculinity.
It's almost like he gives no shits now at the end of the first season. Now he doesn't care.
Yeah, he definitely has gone through those experiences, and we won't mention them for those of us, or for those of you that
haven't seen the series. We're not trying to give anything away.
It's beautiful to watch, and that's why I'm so excited about being part of this project, that each character has such a growth over the period of the series.
It is quite interesting to watch because every character that you thought you had them nailed down at the beginning of the season, not completely different by the end of the first season. Every single one. It's just crazy.
And I think it's, you know, of course, to the credit of Philip K. Dick, in his understanding of what humanity is about, to develop characters who have a feeling about themselves that over the course of the series changes and grows and expands and puts them through different experiences. The way that life is, anyway, for sure, but certainly in this context and the over-dramatic, I mean, I'd say it's overly dramatic set of circumstances of our enemies having won the war, that it produces more intensity of every possible human emotion. And I think that's what draws people in.
Right.
It gets you hypnotized. You have to keep watching, pay attention.
I know you had mentioned that D.J. Qualls, who plays Frank's best friend, was also an incredible actor. We had spoken about that before. He seems to have quite a range.
Yeah, he's such a powerful character actor. And I haven't seen his other work. But he has quite a big fan base, and he has such a social media presence. I didn't know what that was until we went to Comic-Con.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and fans were reacting to him. And when he was introduced, there was a lot of people.
Excuse me. Yeah, I mean, that's where it's at. We have to work on that. I have to get to tweeting more.
Yeah. I noticed that you tweeted that I don't tweet enough.
I did. Tweeted that
you did. You see my response to that?
I did see that.
Huh?
I did. I saw that. Why were you... First thing I noticed when I saw that response, when you said, like, in between...
Sprinting
and...
In spurts.
In spurts, that's what you said. But the thing that I noticed about that tweet is, why were you up that early in the morning? It was like 5 o'clock.
Yeah, I have a like quite a
5 a.m.
tweaky sleep pattern. I can sleep for 4 hours and get up and do some work.
Yeah.
Then I'll go back and sleep for 4 hours. I can take naps, like 20-minute naps. That's the actor's kind of trick. If we get 20 minutes, that's cool. I mean, in between scenes,
right.
You don't have a long time, but if you can get committed to doing that, it really is restful.
Oh, I don't know. If I nap, I'm usually down. Like, I'm napping, that's it.
Well, there's some part of our brain, and I'm very interested in that exploration of what the brain's about, the conscious subconsciousness, all of that. Resonates for me.
Wouldn't you love to know why we dream the crazy stuff that we dream? I mean, I dream crazy things.
Yeah.
Crazy things.
And that's 90% of your consciousness, the subconscious, that you don't have control over. It's an amazing computer that we have, and I'm so excited about anything that causes the growth of the human being, causes the computer to think in a different way. To imagine different scenarios. That's why I love acting so much. Each character being different.
This is so weird. I had a dream last night, and I know it's because I'm here in Vancouver, and we had just talked about Prison Break, that I had a dream that I was trying to help Wentworth Miller demo his basement. Like we were going to remodel this basement or something. Why a basement? I don't even know. But
right,
that was
right.
Crazy. Crazy. And every night when I go to bed, do you dream a lot? Because I dream every night. Every single night.
Yeah.
Always something completely crazy.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, at least we weren't demoing the basement, you know, on a cliff that was 500 feet in the air or something.
Right,
so
right.
It was relatively normal, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's a good sign, I'd say, dreaming that you're in contact with your subconscious. You get to see what it is during the day that you would never think could
right,
happen.
That's so silly. That's
yeah.
so crazy.
Well, one other thing I would say about DJ is that he has such a distinctive look.
Mm-hmm.
And
very recognizable.
Very recognizable. And you could say the same thing about me.
Yeah.
Distinctive and recognizable. And to take something that distinctive and be able to play different aspects of that look to create a character, he's like an underestimated actor.
Yeah.
And I think certainly his social media group don't think so. And I've seen it. I've witnessed the amount of fans that he had. They really like him. For what you don't expect from DJ when you first see him,
mm-hmm.
he definitely proves that if you've underestimated him, you have a long way to go to find that he's an amazing actor.
I love it when people underestimate me. Kind of gives you that. It gives you the advantage, I think, in
it
my
does.
Experience.
It does. It really disarms people. It
really does.
That's why assuming that people are certain things or having a certain prejudice towards someone because of, for whatever reason, just that they wear glasses is enough. But anything.
Are you talking about my glasses
that
I wore today?
Oh, no.
I know.
All.
I know.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I know. I'm just giving you.
Well, I'm
time.
The one that chose the glasses for my character. Very anxious to soften my look and be able to develop Takumi in a way. Takumi is very much a part of who I am, but certainly been able to take the liberty to kind of spread it out. The glasses were the beginning. But back to DJ.
Yeah.
And just the parallel between the two of us, that we have such a distinctive look, and you don't forget that face,
mm-hmm.
that we both have wide ranges of who we can play and what we do.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, speaking of expanding Takumi, your right-hand man,
mm-hmm.
Joel De La Fuente,
mm-hmm.
who I absolutely despise on the show, but it seems like such a lovely human being.
Why would you say that? No, but it's absolutely true. And amazing, talented actor. Crazy, crazy skills. And I haven't had the pleasure or honor of working with many Asian actors, Asian American actors, and to me, he's one of the most foremost actors in the Asian American acting group. And we had such a great first season, being able to use the depth, our own personal depths, our own personal commitment to the craft of acting, to develop relationship between Takumi and Kido that I think was successful
mm-hmm.
in what we were trying to achieve. And it's so strange because usually we could trade positions. I could be the mean cop and he could be the trade minister.
Right.
You know, and that's why the looks betray the whole relationship between Kido and Takumi, but that he has the skill to be able to play somebody that's so not his own personal character. And for me to play somebody who's intimidated by someone like that, has to match his wits against someone like that. Excuse me. so unusual for me as an actor to play.
Yeah, and he, like I said, he seems lovely because we've tweeted. We've been tweeting just a little. Uh-huh. And he just seems like very kind sort of fellow. Not that I know him that well personally, you know, but his character on the show is absolutely, it's just as nasty as Rufus Sewell, maybe more so.
Yeah, well, it's scary.
It is.
Because if you take the way they look, even just as their characters, Keto and Smith.
Mm-hmm.
With Smith, it's very clear. Immediately, you get an intense vibe where you don't want to mess with that guy.
Yeah. Well, over Gruppenführer Smith.
Yeah.
Hey, see?
But with Keto, you can definitely underestimate him.
Yeah.
Until he speaks. And when he does, it comes from a spooky place.
Yeah. Well, plus he's done some pretty heinous shit on the show.
Yeah. Different. Yeah. That he hasn't done it personally, but what he's been responsible for definitely is.
Yeah.
And it gets you to understand because we certainly in this country have gone through stages where torture has been applied to prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
And we've justified it. And we've tried to, justify it.
Yeah.
And in that way, the argument is it's all done in the name of saving lives. Our own, military.
Right.
And that's how I think it goes in war and in conflict. There are absolute justifications for some pretty horrendous things.
I agree. And that's the way it is. It's parallel to the show.
Mm-hmm.
About, you know, there's a lot of nasty business going on the show. And, you know, especially if you're Jewish, you know, and on the show. Not in real life. I'm clarifying for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
If you're Jewish on the show, you're screwed.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, definitely. That leaves one character. And that's Joe. Luke Kleintank.
Oh, yeah. Luke Kleintank. The hunky eye candy of the show, I think.
That is definitely apropos.
Yeah.
You know, to me, he's like, looks like a James Dean kind of guy for his generation. I said that from the beginning.
Yeah.
Definitely an actor who knows how not to use that.
Mm-hmm.
He downplays it so much. And in real life, he's a very humble guy. So it really rounds out a cast that is committed to their characters and committed to the show.
This lady was eyeballing us. She's staring us down. She went around the corner. I thought she was going to come in. I thought she was going to try the door.
Yeah.
All right.
So, Luke, from the first time I met him, we actually met discussing that he was up for a part in a movie called Little Boy that I did.
Which is excellent, by the way. You can find it on Netflix for anyone listening.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he was up for a part in Little Boy.
Yeah, he was to play Little Boy's brother, older brother.
Mm-hmm.
And so we hit it off right away. Very humble guy. And underneath that, also has a toughness. He like has some street kind of mentality and vibe. Grew up in Baltimore. And I always have respect for East Coast people in general. And for guys that are, I mean, it's out of respect when you call them East Coast guys. You know, just different mentality from West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
California, LA and San Diego is not Boston. And it's not Baltimore. And it's not New York. Right? And there's some real attitude that I have a respect for him. And he has that. So if Luke was from California and a surfer, and I mean, he could very well.
He looks the part. I mean, he could do that.
He could do
play
that.
And
I think he'd be a different person if that was the case.
But yeah.
Coming from the East Coast, he definitely carries a weight to his acting, a very strong clarity about what he's doing, just deep respect for the. As with every cast member here, I've never worked in a cast where there is not one person who's kind of out of whack with the rest.
Okay.
And everybody has to adjust to that, but
right.
That's not the case in this series.
So have you ever worked with someone who was so stupid it was frustrating for you? You don't have to name any names.
No.
I'm just saying, have you ever been like, because I have,
And
it really sucks.
Oh. Well, if I did, I'm not recalling them at this point. One thing that I do when I go to work, I typically, if there's a problem, I find a way to resolve it within myself.
Right.
Because ultimately, we can't change anything.
No.
And we can, you know, whine and bitch about them all we want. That's not going to change them. And really, it's about being able to change your own perception. And ultimately, with people that are, you know, for whatever we call stupid or ignorant, or to find something about them that I can relate to.
Yeah.
And when you have compassion for people, it's an amazing trait. To have. I have grown pretty dispassionate about people having grown up in an intense environment in the 50s. But I've learned over the years to be massively compassionate, have an understanding for people, and
I think that comes with age more, because I have
it
too.
Does.
I mean, the
it
older
does.
I get, the more I think when someone does something that would completely have angered
mm-hmm.
me when
mm-hmm.
I was younger, I would think, well, I wonder why they're doing that. What's
yeah.
the cause? You know, why? What's the reason?
Yes, that is very much how I feel about people that you might call stupid or ignorant.
Unless it's offering me,
too.
Unless it's offering me $700 for webcam.
Oh, not to say
not
I
you.
Did. You better clarify.
Everybody,
that.
No, I will clarify that. I had this guy offer me. He texted me $700 for webcam sex on my social media account, which is ridiculous. I don't know who this guy is, so I posted it because I like to call these jokers out. And Carrie just brought it up a little while ago before we started talking.
Because you were. Showing that text and letting everybody know that that's
no.
the pitfalls of being a radio host.
Oh, it doesn't even really, I don't think it has anything to do with that. I think it's just the internet. It's just the internet.
Well,
internet's
yeah.
crazy.
Yeah. Well, there's one thing about media. We definitely get more attention than the average person.
Yeah.
Way more. And it's very possible to go down any number of directions, down the rabbit hole. And it takes a certain sanity and compassion and maturity to handle the amount of attention that we get in this business.
So how do you handle that kind of attention?
I'm pretty gracious. I mean, I'm massively gracious because I love people and I love meeting new people. And I don't mind giving them some attention. And I think it's something as a celebrity we don't consider enough. There should be like a handbook for celebrities about how you deal with yourself, first of all.
Yeah.
If you become a celebrity and people are wanting to know more, you got to have a certain mind frame that I think not all actors have. Some can get totally whacked out, lost. Some can become totally drugged out and end up in AA because it's too powerful. the force of celebrity is way beyond quote unquote normal or average. It's it's a crazy thing to deal with.
It's so crazy. I don't know myself if
you could
handle it. I could handle it. That's why I do radio. Nobody gives a crap what you look like on the radio, and they certainly aren't going to recognize me on the street. So, you know, I don't think I could do it. It takes a special person to not be angry all the time.
Well,
it's a lack of privacy.
I always refer to being raised to be gracious, to be honoring, to be appreciative. Really, these people, and there's quite a range of people that definitely ask for attention. So you do have to be very discretionary. The one thing that I absolutely do not encourage, and that's to, when I'm with my family at dinner, I ask them to wait.
Right.
And kind of odd, you know, you get it. You know, they want a picture and you want to accommodate them. But some people are so pushy.
I've also noticed that you put your family before anything. You know, several times we pause the interview so that you could talk to your children on the phone, or you know, if they need you, you're right there, right that second, which is amazing.
Well, it really has to do with what you value the most. Also recognizing you only have one lifetime, and you have one opportunity to be a father, especially. And I've had to grow up and be a father, because nobody is born a father. And just from the first time you see your own child, you know, it shook me up for a week that I was now a father. I had a very sort of strained relationship with my father, and it was, you know, he was never prepared to be a father, and certainly having been in the Korean War, and the horrible war that it was, not that there were any good wars, but yeah, I think we didn't appreciate PTSD until Vietnam, for the veterans of World War II and Korea, really have compassion for them. It was like, go out and do all that kind of stuff, like to the worst of what humanity is, to kill another human being, and come home and be normal, and be father knows best, and leave it to Beaver. It was just an odd moment in American history, because we had no experience with that. We didn't know what to do with it. And instead we get bombarded with expectations of being a consumer and being such a role model, and they put the screws to my father's generation with all the food manufacturers and testing chemicals on it.
Yeah.
And then putting us through Western medicine. It's just amazing we all didn't.
Like I said, the United States is a big old petri dish right now. Mm-hmm. We're an experiment of some sort. Well, I really believe that. I really do.
I think the sooner we recognize it as Americans, get a grip on what we've been through just to exist as a nation. The scope of the experiment that we've been through, we take people of all different colors, and including myself as a man of color. What do you do with an experiment like versus an experiment where everybody's one race? It doesn't matter where you are on the planet. Races have been in majorities. And so to have a majority culture with no diversity, you don't have to deal with anybody of color, is one whole experiment. And America has had to go through the toughest experiments.
We're still doing that. I saw on the news this week, the top five contestants for Miss Teen USA are all blonde-haired, blue-eyed, and they all look like the same person.
For Miss America?
Miss Teen America. I think it's Miss Teen America or Miss Teen USA. Anyway, you could Google it. Mm-hmm. And all five of them, blonde hair, blue eyes, and I literally thought, and I know a friend of mine did too, that they were the same girl.
You know, not to mention, I judged one of those guys.
Yeah.
And it was Miss USA, Donald Trump. That was his big thing.
Oh, yeah, he does that stuff, doesn't he?
He's been doing it for a long time.
He's just looking for his next wife.
Kind of thing, back in that day, definitely. And it, actually, the time I was a judge, Miss USA was from Hawaii. And so everybody thought she got in there because of me, and I had nothing to do with it except one vote out of everybody that was there.
People don't know how this stuff works, and we should break it down for them, because when you're in showbiz, it's not like you got to have some serious pull to get anybody in anywhere. I mean, you really have to do it yourself and work your way up to things. Like, nobody's going to be like, well, let's get my brother on the film crew. People don't do that. Mm. I think there's this kind of notion that that happens a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. There is that perspective on it, sure.
Well, I mean, I know it does happen sometimes. I'm just saying I don't think it happens as often as people think it does. Mm. Like, you would not have any way to get Miss Hawaii in, right? How are you going to do that? Like, you don't run that stuff. You're just judging. Like,
yeah.
You don't run the show.
Right.
That's what I'm saying people don't understand.
It's true. And certainly, there were a lot of people in Hawaii that thought, I'm the one that did it. And it was kind of a wake-up call for me. I was just very happy that she became Miss USA. And then she went on to become Miss Universe. Miss Universe. Miss World.
Wow. Yeah. I don't follow that business, so I don't really know how the progression goes. Like, is it Miss USA, Miss World, Miss Universe, whatever you do, I don't know. Miss Cosmos, whatever.
Yeah. Back to the show for a second.
Yeah, we always get off track so bad. We start talking about crazy stuff that has nothing to do with anything.
Well, it was all connected, and we're talking about...
I know there was a logical train of thought
American
there somewhere.
As an experiment.
Yeah.
And we're still in the midst of that. That's why a show like this is important, in the midst of the experiment, to have us stop and consider other possibilities.
Yeah.
And broaden our mind. If one of the most powerful things about a country like America, it's never stopped growing. It's slightly odd that we are at our best when we aren't conservative, when we're being radical, when we're testing the boundaries. You know, how else do scientific discoveries occur?
Right.
It's not because somebody tried something that was approved by everybody. It's somebody had a notion.
Oh, someone's trying
was
to come
looking
in.
To break in. Never mind. Go
Someone's
away.
Someone's trying to come in our door.
Nope.
Okay. People are curious. I've seen lots of people walking by wanting to know what's going on in here.
Well, we're best in America when we are radical, when we are creative. It took Edison 700 times before he perfected the light bulb. Now, if he had stopped at test number 76,
right,
or 122, or 480, we wouldn't have the light bulb as soon as we did. Just somebody was in the mind frame that they were going to find out, and they weren't going to let any sort of logic or restriction or limitation to stop them. They just kept going.
Isn't it funny? And now light bulbs are such pretty standard, everyday little items that everyone uses. Mm. But it was such a humongous discovery.
Yeah.
But now people are like, I'm going to go to the light bulb and get a, or go to the store and get a light bulb for 5 cents.
Yeah.
you know?
No, absolutely. And that's what's interesting about being in this industry. You tend to come across a different kind of personality, and albeit the range is pretty big, from just wonderful, lovely human beings who have a certain talent or a bent to perform, to totally whack out crazy people. I saw an episode of X-Files last night with my daughter, and this actor scared the whole...
Do you know him in person?
Crap out of me. No, but I've seen him in other work. But the range that he went through was crazy. I've never seen anybody get so worked up that their whole face became beet red. I mean, yeah, you know, you can get all whacked out and you can look like you're overly excited, but this guy, oh.
He just lost his shit on camera. That's basically what you're trying to say. He just lost it.
And
lost
it looked like, though.
Looked like.
That he recovered. I mean, yeah. He played a different aspect after that. I mean, the guy was an incredible actor to be able to let that happen. So
how do you... one last question, mm-hmm. and then I'll let you go, because I know mm-hmm. we've got to wrap up. I wanted to ask you, what do you draw from for scenes where you have to get angry or maybe cry or anything like that? What do you personally draw from to do that?
Well, to get angry, mm-hmm. all I have to remember is growing up in the South in the 50s.
Oh, there you go. That would do it.
Immediately. And yes. You know, like bar none. Or situations when my dad would come home and he had been in that environment of U.S. military. With officers who were from the South, or just enlisted. He was just surrounded by racism. And he was from Hawaii. You know, people don't recognize enough. When most Americans think about Hawaii, it's a beautiful, kind of peaceful place, everybody's cool, but do not mess with Hawaiians or the local guys in any bad sort of way. They will smile and be the most loving, compassionate people and helpful and friendly. But do not mess with that. Because we tend to, in America, take people for granted.
Mm-hmm.
And we assume that if they're being that way, they're slightly naive, they may, you know, and try to take advantage of that. That's been the problem in the United States, I think, on the whole planet. Is people were very welcoming when Captain Cook came to Hawaii, they thought he was a god. They treated him like a god. And when they found out he wasn't, and he tried to pull some of his tricks,
yeah,
they killed him. And
that's
they ate him. They ate him. We don't like you, and it's time for you to leave the planet. And we're going to make sure there's nothing left of you. We're going to eat you.
They weren't even stuck in an alp. In an airplane, like out in the Alps or wherever.
No.
What was that movie? Where they had to eat each other because they were in a plane crash.
Yes.
Is it called
that
Alive?
Is that? I think it was.
Up in
the Himalayas or...
Yeah, something like that.
Or in the Andes.
Andes. Maybe that was it. But you see the title of that movie that I just recalled?
Mm-hmm.
That's what's taking up space rather than actual knowledge in my head right now.
No, you know what? It all ends up in the subconscious, and it's clicking with connections that we don't understand with the conscious mind. But that's why I'm excited. There's still a lot of work to be done, and we have incredible potential. One of the last things I can say in this interview is how much optimism I have because we have such a great potential. And people say it's like, ridiculous, you're such an idealist, you're not being real. It's like, well, it may be that I have a sense of what is real is far greater than what's commonly accepted. I think we have such a potential
mm-hmm.
that we can tap. And hopefully some of these distressing situations will bring out the best of us, to create opportunities for growth, create other answers that may not always be the norm. That's why I always feel like, you know, it doesn't matter how crazy a solution seems, it's another piece of the puzzle that will lend to who we are as human beings and move us toward a greater potential, a potentialization of our capability.
That sounds good to me. I think we're going to leave it at that. And I appreciate your time and all the time you've taken with me since I've been here to interview. It's amazing. Thanks a lot.
Aloha.
Aloha.